At the Bisecast, we strive to be by and for our community. March has been a historic month for the bisexual community. The NYC article and subsequent Slate article has sparked a drive by the community to learn our history, collect our massive literature, and bring our culture to the forefront for all to see. The Bisexual Resource Center wrapped up a successful Bisexual Health Awareness Month campaign, and Binet USA made great progress with the presentation for GLAAD last week. 2014 promises to be a landmark year for us. We would like to take a moment and review the events of this month and look at the prospects for the year ahead. And to do that, we have a special guest. I'm Lynette.
Hey, I'm Faith Cheltenham, president of Binet USA.
Thank you, Faith, so much for being on today.
Hey, happy to be here.
I really appreciate it. So, Faith, you are the president of Binet USA and a mom and busy person.
Yeah.
I'd like to just go over a few things and for the year ahead, if you don't mind.
Sure, let's do it.
Great. So Binet USA joined the Bisexual Resource Center and bisexual health expert Amy Andre with the other LGBT community leaders on the close to the press meeting at the LGBT Health with Vice President Biden. What would you have shared with Vice President Biden about bi people if you'd had the chance?
You know, I think it was so important for him to understand that our health concerns are so huge that, you know, you have to be very explicit when addressing the LGBT community to call out issues about bi health, just like you need to be explicit about calling out issues for lesbian women who experience certain issues differently, and there's different approaches to treatment or intervention, just like we would approach transgender individuals whose health concerns may vary, whether that's them dealing with gender confirmation surgery or having high risk of cancer as well. So there are many different things that the White House should be doing more of, especially when it comes to that bisexual specific intervention. So that's something really important, especially when it comes to access to healthcare, because people all around the country are having, you know, have had issues with the healthcare.gov, and bi people are not alone with that. But, you know, we're persisting in getting what we need to stay healthy, I think.
And we appreciate that. So what experiences have you heard from bi people around the country about their experiences with access to healthcare?
Oh, my goodness. It's really been troubling to a certain extent just how much work people have had to do, and not necessarily just with healthcare.gov being shut down, but mostly within their own states. So each state has a healthcare exchange, and of course there's a few states that don't have any healthcare exchanges because they didn't agree to participate in this landmark healthcare achievement to a certain extent, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've heard from folks who, you know, had life-threatening illnesses, and they went to their healthcare exchange, they did everything on time, got the paperwork in, and then were told, okay, sure, you can have your insurance. Yay, you've got it. And, of course, they paid their premium and then wanted to have a surgery to save their life. And they had to go through so many hurdles. So one of the important things that we want to share with bi folks is that Binet USA is out there and available, just like Bisexual Resource Center or other bi orgs who do have a connection with the White House, that if you're in a life-threatening situation where your medical treatment will save your life and you need it right away and healthcare issues are staying in the way, I'd love to know about it. I'd love to be able to advocate for you with your state, or in some cases with the federal government, go straight to the White House and say, here's an important member of our community who needs assistance. So I think it's really important for folks to know that we're here as that type of resource and have some connection with members of the LGBT liaison's office or different offices in the White House that are working specifically on LGBT health.
Yes, very important. And that is very comforting to hear that.
I think one of the other things that people aren't talking about as well is that transgender bi folks are also very, they're just not being taken care of in the way that we want to see taken care of with this landmark legislation. It doesn't cover many things that trans folks need to have, you know, gender confirmation, and to understand that, hey, people are just, they're seeking to be the gender that they are, and that's really what's going on. And so occasionally, depending on what a person you know, has recommended by their doctor, right? I mean, this is going to the doctor, you're, you know, talking to folks, and this is your medical health and care, and to find that, you know, transgender people are not being served in that way, the same way lesbian, gay, or bisexual folks may be served. Now, often, bi people aren't served at all because they're not reaching out to us.
Yes.
But it's different, you know, when it comes to transgender, when they're just like, no, we're not. Even if we did know about you, you're still not getting anything. So I think bi people can really call, I think, a rallying cry and say, you know, we've got trans folks amongst us. That's part of our community. There are many people who are trans who identify as bi as well, and they need to be covered. So even as we ask for things for ourselves, we always have to be looking to see where we can create relationships with other communities and really be an ally.
Exactly. And I totally agree. I think that that's the way that we always function, and we should continue to do so that way. And I am very concerned about our trans community getting adequate health care and not looking to less than credible resources. It is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Our leaders have already made great strides in bringing our issues to the government. Last year, 33 of our strongest activists met at the White House conference. Have you seen any progress already come from this?
Absolutely. You know, part of what happened when we went to the White House was to present ourselves to the government and make the case. And in doing so, you develop strategies to do that elsewhere. You know, and part of, you know, how we got to the White House was through the development of a relationship, right? And that's where it starts. And, of course, it, like many things with bi folks, a lot of it starts with Robin Oakes. Robin was great in creating a relationship with the White House folks to get us in the door. And, you know, Ellen and myself went to the White House in 2010. Ellen Roostrom, the president of the Bisexual Resource Center, you know, dear friend, and we went to the White House in 2010, super excited, and I went there with the intent to say, you know, I want more of us here. You know, when you have an LGBT reception, there needs to be bi people. Nothing about us without us is the hashtag for that, right? You know, you say LGBT, we shouldn't just be one of us, right? And so we were able to really break down that door and say, now we get the meeting. You know, and we are following a trajectory that's similar to the transgender community, where they also had meetings that were off the record first before they had an on-the-record meeting. So that's very important to realize that, you know, the White House is reaching out to communities and trying to see, okay, hey, we understand we're not serving your needs. What can we do about that? And so to be able to present, you know, information about what bi people are going through to the federal government was huge. And from there, you know, we've continued the conversation, whether that's being on a call with Vice President Biden to hear what his approach is to LGBT health, or, you know, discussing with the Department of Justice issues surrounding sexual assault on campuses, which hugely affects bi women and bi men, especially young folks. You know, young bi folks are being sexually assaulted on campuses, just like young folks. So we have, you know, we have a stake, a very large stake, and I think the federal government recognizing that makes a great deal of difference. And, you know, to a certain extent, it's a credibility factor. It helps us go to other organizations and say, listen, you know, we're bi, so we work with mainstream communities, and we push them, we push the White House, and we're going to push you, too. We're going to push another, you know, a national LGBT organization to do the work that they should be doing, just like we're going to push the federal government. So we have that opportunity to do so, but we can only really do it once we get a lot of people together and just try to find what we have commonalities on and what we're in desperate need of as a community. And that's, I think, one of the greatest things about the White House meeting is it helps foster community. It helps people say, okay, let's approach this with, you know, arms together, linked, march forward. And that's how some of the greatest changes are made for humans, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I very much agree with you. I think that we've seen a resurgence of involvement from everyone. Even, you know, I refer to it as the foot soldiers, you know. And it's very encouraging.
Oh, sure. And I think one of the coolest things as well is that, you know, one of our really awesome folks who was there who presented Amy Andre, she was hired by the federal government in a health capacity. And, you know, I'd love to think that her coming to the White House helped with that, you know? I mean, she was already the best acknowledged health experts we have, Amy Andre. Mm-hmm. So, you know, understanding that she's just really recognized, has written a book on bisexual health in 2007, and, you know, just been doing work for the LGBT community for so long, of course, it just makes sense that she's a great fit. But we know as bi people that when we go in the door, even certain places that we expect to be beloved and respected don't understand us because of the words that we use to identify our community, or the words that we use to identify ourselves personally. So, you mm-hmm. know, it was a great thing to hear that a member of our, you know, of the people who presented was able to, you know, get in the door with her credentials and take it to the next place. And say, okay, now, you know, I'm really working for health for my folks, you know. Like, this is my job. So I don't know exactly what she's doing there, but, like, I don't know the details, but, and that's okay. I really, you know, it's not so much about the details as much as it is the opportunities, right? And even mm-hmm. to say that, you know, we support her, we support any person who's going to take their professional life and devote it to saving ours. Thank you.
Exactly.
Appreciate that. You know, same goes for Ellen Roostrom with the Bisexual Health Month and, you know, just the wonderful things that we're seeing coming out of our community right now.
Absolutely. I'm quite jazzed, as they say, about it. It's very heartening, as I mentioned before. Okay, so, This is a really good and fun and interesting thing. Bi-Net has received a grant from Google. Yay. And yay. I know. What will be happening at Bi-Net USA and its website with that grant?
Well, one of the things that's just really awesome about that is obviously we've been struggling with Google over the use of the word bisexual on their restricted list. And, you know, recently had an article come out in the Pasadena Star News and their associated newspapers about this issue with Google restricting it. And they were able to talk to another press source who said, well, you know, these things change and we're not quite sure what's going on. And, of course, you know, as a bi person, you can't help but laugh. It just sounds so bi, you know. The problem is bi. So, I can't put my finger on it, you know, and so it's very, it's disheartening that, you know, we're still having an issue, you know, even connecting with the one of the biggest organizations in the world. But we understand to a certain extent, the search algorithm of Google is their biggest product. It's what makes that whole company go. And so it can be hard to make changes there. But to see them in their other departments or other groups like Google nonprofits, for them to say, yeah, Bi-Net USA should definitely get a grant of $10,000 a month to buy AdWords. That's huge for us. That's $120,000 a year in marketing that we now have. It also comes with a great deal of access to paid support for Google products. So we get a whole bunch of Google apps that we didn't have before, and you know, we're just stringing it all up, going, whoa. So part of what we're trying to do now is to develop a bi hack. It's an homage to Courtney Ziegler's trans hack. And, you know, I've talked to him, great trans black activist. And he's just, you know, on fire for the trans community, setting it up, saying, listen, we have these offers. We have trans hackers. Let's go. Let's get everybody together and create websites for our community and create, you know, opportunities that are technical and pushing the boundaries. So, you know, after seeing what he was doing there, I talked to him about it and was just like, let me get some tips from you, buddy. Whatever you can help us with would be great. And so I think that's one of those fun things that as a black person, as a black woman, you know, I have connections and allies, with just my, you know, my cultural identity and background. Mm-hmm. And so I can go someplace and say, you know what, I'm going to push you here on this issue. You're going to push me on this issue. And we're mm-hmm. going to find, we're going to find strength for both of our communities. And so BiHack kind of comes out of some of those conversations that we would get together and overhaul the Bayonet USA website. The Bayonet USA website has files going back to 1995 on it. I've been very wary of doing anything to the website because it's older than like some people I know. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, what do you do with a site like that? Well, you know, you want to have some experts come in and look at everything. So we have an SEO volunteer who's volunteered his time to come in and look at what we can do to adjust our website to make it better. We've got people who are volunteering to, you know, help us out with the tech stuff, the hard stuff. So, and this is all because, you know, in part we got this Google grant. So now that we have this, we have to really change our website to be reflective of, you know, the type of traffic we're trying to drive to our site, you know, and make it someplace where people feel like, yes, I'd like to donate as soon as possible. How do I do that? Yes, I'd like to join your newsletter and hear more from you. So it's an opportunity. And I do believe that having more by nonprofits with Google, with the Google nonprofit program, just really just provides that additional leverage on the word. You know, like, listen, you know, there's $40,000 in Google grants a month and you're spending on restricted word, you know, that's something that the Google AdWords teams might be able to advocate on our behalf to the larger Google search engine in the sky, as I have taken to calling it.
Yes, absolutely. That is a very good point. I mean, you know, if we have to look so hard to find things, how are we going to see their ads?
Right? Wouldn't that, I mean, they don't like that. They want their ads to work. So, we're thinking outside of the box, you know.
Exactly.
You know, trying to say, you know, what are our approaches? And that's not just me, that's the whole board, I think, of Bayonet USA. We've got amazing folks, like Patrick Richard Singh, who goes by Fulponymous. On Facebook, you know, we've got Allison Walkley on our board, and of course the great folks like Gary North or Luigi Ferrer or Morgan Good or Stacey Langley, who's just an amazing advocate who's come from the Houston space, is now in California. And so we're just connecting as many people as possible. And I think that's really exciting about the Bayonet board too, is that our cultural backgrounds are very diverse. Our generational backgrounds are extremely diverse. You know, so we've got Gary North, who was there when Bayonet was founded. You know, he has been just an incredible light and mentor to me, which is just amazing. People don't realize a lot of the writing I do goes through Gary's hands first, and he's taught me the meaning of a comma. You know, like, because I didn't know it before. And so that's what I want all bi people to have. Would just be this community and this connection and understanding that, you know, you can go to your elders and not see them as people who are, you know, policing your identity as much as people who are giving you some tools and tricks and tips based off the fact that they've been living this life as a proud bi person for many years. And they mean no disrespect to you and your generation. In fact, they're quite interested in trying to figure out what's going on with your generation. So it's a big challenge for our community that we have so many generations in it, and that there's no, like, kind of cultural awareness surrounding the fact that, you know, even at the White House, we had people in their 20s and people, I think, in their 80s. So, I mean, that's a huge spread.
I have noticed there's, you know, a large group of new people coming in who are, like me, up until a year ago, totally unaware of our culture and our leaders and the people who to talk to and who to listen to. And I think that it would be beneficial if, you know, the people in the group knew that, you know, when someone was giving an advice, they really did know what they were talking about. You know, I think that's important.
Oh, yeah. It would be lovely. And it's so hard. And I know it for myself. You know, Robin was one of the first people I met in the bi movement. You know, I was kind of unique in the sense that we're not so unique, but there's several other leaders who've had that experience. But, you know, I met Fritz Klein first, really, he invited my organization, the Queer Alliance at UCLA, including the group Fluid, which was for, you know, bi, pan, fluid, and queer-identified people a student at UCLA, he said, love to have you guys come down. We're going to take care of you. We're going to get you a van. We're going to, you know, take care of your hotel. We're going to take care of your food. You know, and I explained to him, I said, listen, we're students. We don't even have money. We don't even have gas to get to San Diego, you know. And Fritz, he just took care of it for us. His heart was, I feel, very oriented towards disenfranchised, young, people of color, women. So, you know, I definitely hope that, you know, I mean, that's the first, at least I heard on a telephone and I met this one time in 2003. I mean, I don't know the full story, but he just seemed really all, I mean, he just made me feel really welcome, especially as a person who was really young. And I had no I just didn't know anything about being bi. You know, and I remember pushing back on Robin, like, are you sure about this word? What is this word? You know, I think it's a traditional coming out story. I think that's a very common coming out story for bi people. You know, I came out as a lesbian. My first girlfriend and I broke up because, you know, I still thought guys were hot. And we went and saw The Matrix, and she didn't like it. And she said, you only like this because Keanu Reeves is in this. And I said, you know what? Keanu's a deal breaker for me, baby. Like, you know, I love Keanu. You don't like Keanu, we can't be together. You know? and it was like this moment where people say, oh, well, it was just really about Keanu and your love of celebrities. I'm like, no. It was really about the fact that I still appreciated men. I still wanted to be able to. And I'm lucky that, you know, my male-identified partner, my husband, he has an appreciation for women. We can both look at them. He has no problem with me, you know, talking about my desire for women or sharing that with him or talking about my experiences. I don't have to stay in the closet with him. And, you know, the doors of our bedroom to search center open to understanding desire. Even though we, you know, we're particularly monogamous, we're just the kind of geeky people who watch a lot of television and do a lot of activism, I guess, you know. But it's an interesting story when you look at all these people who've been bi and what their experiences have been. And some folks are not mono or monogamous. They're poly, and they're having wonderful lives that are non-traditional that bring so much gorgeousness and flavor and diversity to their worlds. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if we can talk more about that. You know, what do our families look like as bi people?
I think the more that we talk about it and that the general public, you know, starts to understand that just the word of bisexual does not come with it. Here, let me start over with that. Because you're bisexual, that does not automatically mean that you have this set of things that you do, like have threesomes or cheat. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that when people start understanding that most of us are just everyday real people, I think that will be easier for partners, family members, the general public to be more accepting of the word bisexuality as the word really means and not what is put onto it.
Absolutely. And we have to shape our leadership to understand, you know, how that process works. And folks like, you know, Robin or Lonnie or Lorraine or Amy Andre or, gosh, Emily Gievendorf, Emily Drennan, Linda Susan, we've Ron Sarisha, Dr. Rukati, I mean, man, there's the list goes on. I had a great meeting with GLAAD and we recently, you know, had Tara Avery, wonderful trans activist who's a comic book writer, who's very, perceived and accepted within the LGBT comics world, where she's really just running the ball there. And, you know, at the same time, we had a joint meeting, so we're in the New York offices at the same time, where, you know, Dr. H and Paul Nacera, who runs Bi Request, and, you know, they're there as bi guys, being awesome, and longtime folks who've been associated and known and discussed bi people and bisexuality. So, and that's a big thing. I mean, it's all, I talk about staying on brand as like a catchphrase for folks. It's like, oh, it sounds sexy. It's like we're on Entourage, right, baby? But really it's not. I mean, it's really about understanding that your identity is important to you, and it's also important that other people understand you, right? That's what brand really is, right? And when I talk about brand, it's like, oh, okay, people are like, well, that's one way of looking at it. But I could just say, listen, you're just bi. You know, what does that mean? But it, sometimes with certain audiences, it's a little easier for them to understand a different language, like brand awareness, or misrepresentation in media, and say, okay, I'm upset about bisexual erasure, but I'll frame it in terms that you understand. Right? I'm upset about misrepresentation. Oh, I get it. You know, where when we were saying bi erasure, maybe that wasn't getting across. Because they're like, we don't see it. They're right there shaking their booty. What do you mean? Like, you know?
Right.
So it's just really, it's about trying to find innovative ways to discuss our community and our issues and understanding, you know, when you have a bi woman treated badly on television and she's struggling with her identity, she's struggling with issues that affect bi women, and you're not IDing her as bi, that doesn't help anybody. You know, I know she's a fictional character, so she'll probably be fine. But, you know, like, the actual people that you're utilizing that culture, and that's really what people have to feel like, the responsibility. You utilize bi culture to tell a story. So you therefore have a responsibility to that culture to be culturally appropriate, to be culturally sensitive. Right? Yeah. And I know this is a black person. So sometimes, a lot of times, the being black and identifying with my, you know, West Indian, American Indian, and African culture that I have helps me kind of understand my approach to my bi-ness. And understanding that, like, hey, if I were seeing this as a black person and it was about race, you know, we would be, you know, we'd be,
exactly,
as I say, setting shit on fire. And not in, like, a trying to burn down the world, but in trying to burn down that structure that is oppressive and racist, and getting rid of that institution that promotes racism and takes our lives. You know, and so it's an interesting conundrum to a certain extent, because many folks in the bi community, there are white folks. You know, this is true. And there are a lot of folks who are not skilled in talking about culture, who are bi, who are learning, just like there's folks in every community. And so being able to break our community up a little bit and say, okay, what makes up our community? You know, well, there's a lot of people of color. There's a lot of trans folks. There's undocumented folks. There's people who are not being served by their community and their government, and they're also bi. So it just means that we have so many more friends to make, right? We have all these poverty numbers. And one of the things that's really important is, like, wow, bi people are impoverished. It's hard to raise money within bi communities because many people are poor. Many people don't have that money. You know, they wish they could donate it, but they have trouble donating because of where they're at in their life, and helping them understand, well, here's what you can do. If you donate $50, you can get a letter from Binance USA that says that you donated, so it's a tax-free donation. And you can use that on your taxes. Actually talking to people about that, I think, would be very good. Getting people to understand what it means to donate to a nonprofit and how they can, you know, write it off at the end of the year. People talk about it, but nobody's ever, like, had a workshop. You know, it'd be good for us to have more financial awareness, which means that we can reach out to organizations that work on financial security, work on poverty, work on food insecurity. We can say to those orgs, listen, you work with gay orgs, you need to work with bi orgs, just like you need to work with trans orgs. You have to work with us because our communities are suffering. They need food. They need access to food. They need to understand that there is a stigma surrounding food stamps. But many places can give you a Visa card where you put your EBT on it and you can get food. You know, so being able to cross those boundaries, I think, is very important. And just to make sure folks, you know, their bellies are full at night. You know, just some of the simple things in life are happening for everybody.
Yeah, I think there's a big myth in the general public that bisexual people are basically white upper class with a lot of time on their hands. Mm-hmm. And we know that is not the case. I mean, most of us are, you know, deciding whether or not to pay the light bill or give our children lunch money. We're just like everyone else.
Yeah.
So yes, that would be good if we could figure, you know, work on some ways for fundraising, and, you know, so we can get those support systems started.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And it can be difficult, which is why, you know, we have to talk about the framing. You know, one of the things that I've talked to trans leaders about is their framing of transgender issues as the worst. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yes, absolutely. The safety concerns, the violence that trans people experience on a daily basis, nothing like what bi people experience on a daily basis. That's the reality, right? But I know as a black person who's subject to racial profiling that one part of my identity doesn't mean I don't have to take part, you know, care of the rest of me, right? So there's a concern for I share with trans leaders of, like, what about the bi aspect? Right? Where are you being taken care of when it comes to your bi-ness? And I like the word bi-ness versus bisexuality because I just get a little concerned as people say, we need to discuss bisexuality. Because they never want to talk about bisexual people, right?
Right.
They want to talk about bisexuality. They want to talk about sexuality and what that means instead of talking about bi people and the lives that they're living. And that, I just get irked by that. So I kind of think of bi-ness and things like that. And people are like, why don't you mean bisexuality? I'm like, yes, I guess I do. But, you know, what I'm really trying to get you to understand is that we're more than an ICY, right? We are not a sexuality. We are a group of people, traditionally disenfranchised, invisibilized, and erased. And without really pulling us out and acknowledging us with very specific interventions, you're not going to help us. You know, you can study cancer all you want and know that bi women have higher rates of breast cancer or ovarian cancer and know that bi women have, it's like the quote, it's very strange. And you're like, really? But you read it over and over. And it's something like, bi women are the most likely group to never have had a pap smear or a mammogram. Right? So they have the lowest rate of cancer screening. Right? And so we know that cancer screenings help us with cancer outcomes. Right?
Okay. Yes,
so
yes.
Not having cancer screenings are a risk factor. You know, well, bi women have a whole bunch of other risk factors for cancer. Their mood anxiety is very high. Highest rates of anxiety disorders. Okay? Higher rates of this, higher rates of poverty, higher rates of smoking. These are all risk factors for cancer. So it's hard because people are like, well, what do you mean by people have more cancer? And you're like, well, it's just we have more risk factors. And the kind of good thing is that we know what those risk factors are. So if we're working on these specific issues of tobacco use amongst our community, we can really bring those numbers down quite quickly. But when's the last time you saw a bisexual tobacco program, right, where it was talking about bi people using tobacco? Fortunately, for the most part, you're going to see something that says gay tobacco use, lesbian tobacco use, transgender tobacco use. And so this is something we have to really work with the whole, you know, LGBT community to understand that for years they've seen us as a convenient fiction, right? It's been very convenient for large national LGBT organizations to use data with bi people. And bi people have every right to be angry and say, I am taking my stats back. Don't use them if you're not going to save my life. Stop using stats about bullying and suicide and tobacco use and alcoholism and drug abuse and domestic violence and sexual assault unless you plan on helping us with those issues. Because our numbers are driving them. And it's hard because people are like, I don't want to talk about that. Like, let's not talk about all the bad stuff. But I don't see it as a bad thing as a person who survived, like, 5 sexual assaults before I was 15. Mm-hmm. I see it as a part of my resilience. I see it as part of my strength. That I am here today, that I have a happy sex life, that I have a wonderful husband, a son, and a stepdaughter. That's a good story, right? But it doesn't mean anything to me without recognizing that I went through hell to get here, you know, like beyond. And that's the story of all these bi people I know. You know, we're talking about these disparities, but it's not like they didn't touch us, you know.
I know. And, you know, we share many same points in our history, and I do attribute to my surviving, you know, mentally, to resilience. But I can't help thinking if I had known about support of my community, even one person that I could say, years ago could say, you know, I have these thoughts and I feel like I'm a deviant, you know. Just one person who could tell me, the word that you think bisexual means, that isn't it. And we're here for you. And if I had gone in and could have gotten counseling for, you know, the rape that I had as a child, you know, which I never did, I think that my life may have been a little easier, a lot sooner.
Wouldn't it? And you deserve that. You deserve it. You deserve love. You deserve people acknowledging that someone hurting you was wrong. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sorry that that happened to you. I'm sorry it happened to me. I'm sorry it happened mm-hmm. to so many of us. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of times people are like, well, let's talk about the other stuff you do. We don't even talk about the bad history. So it's kind of why I think I'm writing this book where I've been attempting to write the story of my life to a certain extent, to frame it, but not just because, oh, how interesting for Faith to write a memoir. You know, I've been to the White House, I've been to Windsor Castle, I've hung out with royals, I've been on a reality show that won an Emmy.
Right.
Lots of random stuff happened that was really interesting. But really, to me, it's only interesting in the frame of the child who cried herself to sleep hungry. Right?
Yeah.
In the frame
yeah.
of the kid who was deeply abused and bullied. I mean, I had bones broken by bullies. You know, I had my own survival strategies that I developed
mm-hmm.
to make it through junior high, you know? So,
yeah.
And these are the stories that I think a lot of bi people have that we have to turn into these, like really like a torch song, right? Like this real, this is our, you know, huge story, our epic.
Yes.
And our
yes.
epics are so important, and they're framed in bi-ness. I recently actually saw one of the best bi epics I've ever seen, kind of. It's called The Grand Budapest Hotel, and it just came out. It's by Wes Anderson, and I was blown away that the main character is like really bi, and he even gets ID'd by the villain as bisexual because he confronts the villain. The villain's like, you're a fruit, you're a, you know, queer and all these negative things, but you sleep with old ladies and, you know, you have sex with women and you're a queer. And he says, well, which one is it? You know, very kind of funny. And the guy goes, well, you must be bisexual. And I'm going to kill you or something. And then the guy says, well, let's change the conversation and runs away,
oh.
you know. And it was such
yeah.
a great bi moment. I left the theater with my friends going, did you guys see that? This was a bi character. He's like the
lead. And they actually said the word bisexual.
They did say the word bisexual. And one of my friends was like, I don't know if you really want to be like, yay, because that was a villain calling him bisexual. And I'm like, yeah, but do you hear how he responded?
Yeah.
He's like, let's change the conversation. So, I mean, in part because this guy's starting to kill him. So it was just
exactly.
amazing that we're going to start seeing bi culture being used more and more, like, fluidly to a certain extent. People are just going to be hopefully more fluent in it as well. And seeing that this is an opportunity for you to take a character and have fun with them. And it's in a style and in a history. There's a history of bi men being used like that. For mm-hmm. One of my favorite examples of that in media is Chris Tucker in The Fifth Element, right? Where he
yes.
is super queer, you know, even kind of trans, and it's just very queer, you know, person in The Fifth Element, who's a man who, you know, likes men and likes women. And, you know, there's this amazing moment in the movie where he's, like, having oral sex with a woman, and she's just so lucky to have sex with him. And, oh, it's just like this, just the queerest thing you could think of, you know. And a lot of times it doesn't get framed as bi because people are, you know, they're a little nervous about the word. They don't know what it means, and so they say, I'm not sure if I can use that word, because even though this behavior is bi, maybe they wouldn't be like to call, I don't know if I should call them that. And, you know, it reflects their lack of understanding around this term, that, you know, you can call a person bi, they can also be pan, they can also be fluid, depending on where they are in their life, what they're doing with themselves, that there's lots of different ways to approach our community. But we know when we collect data about our disparities that many people use the word bisexual when identifying themselves in settings when it concerns their health, and we need them to. So it's important that people understand, like, that words, they change depending on where you are, just like you change depending on where you are. And it's okay to use a word one way here. It's okay to use a word another way, you know, and talking to folks who are pansexual, you know, having conversations that I've been having with some of these young folks and reading them, you know, the Bisexual Manifesto from 1990. And they're like, what? When did that happen? That happened before I was born.
Yes. I think it's very important that you know, that not even just the young folks, but the new people understand that this is not a new phase or a trend, and this has been going on for a very, very long time. And one of the ways, like you said, you're writing your book, if we share those stories, our stories, we relate to each other. And a lot of people are going to relate to your story because it is their story too.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important. It's not so much that we need to say, hey, this is my great story. It is more, this is my story and it's your story too.
Well, I think one of the things what I work towards is that, you know, I've got this very science fiction bent in my whole life. And so
mm-hmm.
I kind of have this fantasy that, you know, all the work I do has it's like kind of a reverb. Like there's reverberation mm-hmm. or whatever going back to my child self, right? That I reach through time and take her by the hand and say,
yes.
You're going to be okay. It's going to be okay. So I'm going to do this work so you know we're going to be okay. We are still okay. And knowing that's how I approach my life is to say, like, mm-hmm. hey, you know, you have this trauma. You've had childhood abuse. I had a lot of domestic violence in my house when I was growing up. And I grew up really poor and proud, right, where we weren't on food stamps because my mom was like, no, we're not on food stamps.
Yeah.
We're just going to make it work, you know?
Yeah.
And so I remember just being hungry, you know?
Commodities, yes.
Right? You know, just having friends who gave me, I remember one friend gave me a quarter, like, every day of school for, like, 5 years. And with that quarter, I bought an ice cream. And that mm-hmm. ice cream, like, held me over until I got home, where I would cook this huge meal for myself. And me and my brother would just make massive meals out of eggs and bread and stuff. And, of course, that mm-hmm. led to, you know, obesity and me being overweight.
Oh, yeah.
Having these bad eating habits based off the fact that I just didn't have a lot of choices when I was a kid.
Well, exactly. You eat what you have in the house.
Yeah.
The best of
or what you can scrounge up or, you know, in our case, whatever the local food bank had. You know, there was one year we had a giant box of Hershey chocolates. And, you know, my mm-hmm. family was like, well, Cora, we've got this box from the food bank, so this is what we're eating for the rest of the year, you know?
Yeah, exactly. No, I know. I'm very familiar. My family made just enough not to qualify for any programs.
Mm-hmm.
And we depended on commodities and food banks and, you know, all of those things. I mean, I remember being very hungry, hungry and going to school hungry.
Yeah.
You know?
And a lot of people don't talk, we don't talk a lot about food insecurity or food security. You know, my head still wraps around it because I go on speaking engagements now and, you know, people ask me to come and talk and, you know, there's all this food left behind.
Oh, I know.
Like, ah!
I know. I know. I see things like that and my brain hurts. I just go, oh no.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. So it's a challenge, you know, for us to always share our stories, and I think it does come back to this idea of quote-unquote being out. You know, mm-hmm. we get called out by, like, somebody like Dan Savage or other folks who say to us, you need to come out, right? And part of it is understanding that, like, when you come out initially, you know, like, someone like Angelina Jolie is a great example. She came out in 1998, 1999, mm-hmm. And I remember, because if I hadn't read her article, I might not be here. So I was like, oh, that's bisexual? What? So then I had the word and could find stuff out about it. Said nobody had the word for me when I was younger. There was not, like, this acknowledgement of what this means. So she was one of the first people, and there's other folks like Amber Heard who are talking about her and saying she inspired Amber Heard to come out and live her life openly. So we just get really excited by someone like her, and I can imagine that she probably doesn't feel like she needs to talk about her bias. And being bisexual, you know, it's been 20 years, you know, or something like that, you know, so it's approaching 20 years that she's been out. And I think that's something we have to kind of talk about in our community. How do we keep us going in this idea that you're not visibilizing your partnership and the work that you do may not be focused on this community, but you as a bi mm-hmm. person are still doing it. You know, the mm-hmm. same thing for me as a person who has experienced trauma or had, you know, a history of sexual violence happen, you know, how do I talk about that? Even though, you know, I did the Clothes Lane Project and Take Back the Night when I went to college, I've been through years of therapy, I've discussed sexual violence and been an advocate for those in those communities for years. But it's not necessarily something I think, oh, let me talk about that in a bi space. Because it happened, you know, and I dealt with it, quote unquote, still deal with it, but, you know, I talked about it a whole bunch 15 years ago, right? So it's kind of an interesting question about how we as bi people talk about our disparities, talk about our lives, and how we feel comfortable with that in celebrating our resiliency, right? And saying, but, oh my God, but you're still here. How is that crazy? Not only are you still here, you're a huge organizer for this, you know, group, or you're, you know, an advocate in this community. And it's not necessarily always just the bi community. We've got folks who are in Jewish communities. We've got folks who are in trans communities. But where we are, we're still kicking ass, right? There's something really amazing about a group of people who have experienced these types of disparities and are still here, and still here to get up one more day and keep the fight going on a day-by-day basis sometimes for people. But, you know, there's something amazing about a group of people who can do that. And I think that that's something that we, that's also part of our culture, that's part of bi culture is resiliency. And we discuss that just as much as we discuss disparities.
I absolutely agree. I am always amazed and in awe of just how resilient we are. And, frankly, I think even though we are very sad because of the water situations, I think we're happier people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's something to it. You know, being in a bi space, you know, can be very intimidating for folks who haven't done it before. They're like, what does that mean? Oh, I'm gonna go and it's gonna be bisexual. What will it be like? And, you know, the care and the ease and the concern, just, you can see that just melt off their faces. And,
yeah.
You know, just within a few minutes, because they get it. They're like, oh, I just gonna be with people who are like me, who are fiercely independent. Who don't necessarily like molds. Sometimes they like them only to break them. You know, sometimes they like molds only to make them. You know, I mean, we are just a very interesting bunch of folks with various diverse backgrounds. But there's something innate about us that's similar in our bi-ness. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's similarities in our rejection of gender, in our rejection of norms. You know, I'm one of those people who, you know, I thought I was just doing things wrong because I would go to a lesbian club and I'd be dressed like, quote unquote, a straight girl, like a hippie, with like a long flowing skirt, nice earrings, nice makeup. And then I would go to a frat party or something, and I'd be dressed like a butch lesbian. And, you know, nice combat boots, nice jeans, nice outfit, you know, nice beanie. And I kept on being like, why am I doing this? And it's like, no, that's just what I like to do.
Yes,
no,
exactly.
I don't want to fit the mold. I don't want to dress like everyone else. I want to be different. I want to express myself as a person who can dress girly some days, can dress boy, can dress whatever I want. And it's not based off of someone else's perception of my sexuality. It's based off my own perception and how I feel like that. And so it's really interesting that we need to have those discussions about how we ID, how we get ID'd, you know?
Exactly.
And how people kind of see us and how we ID ourselves from day to day. And I think a lot of, you know, the pansexual and genderqueer conversations that we're having are really good for that. Because, you know, once folks kind of get past the, okay, we're not hating each other, we don't hate each other, okay, fine. So we like each other? Like, you know, once people get into that place of realizing that, you know, what I'm expressing to talk to you about is very similar to what you're talking to me about, we start to see, like, how we can have fun with it and how this thing can be a blessing instead of a curse. That, you know, you would be able to have a friend who wants to see you successful in your life, and happy to express yourself in your gender flexibility, your gender presentation, your gender identity, that those are all things that we love, we're excited about.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think one of the thing, one of my favorite quotes is, I didn't change, I just woke up. One of my biggest fears is I thought that if I accepted my bisexuality, I was all of a sudden going to change into this sex crazed person with no morals. And,
yes.
you know, because that was what I was taught. And then when I did accept it, and I realized, well, I'm still the same person I was yesterday, exactly the same person I was yesterday. I just know who I am better.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big, big relief. And I think more and more people are getting to that place, and I'm very encouraged.
Yes, it's really encouraging that, you know, between our collective efforts, you know, we're stirring a pot, and that pot is changing how people are perceiving our culture. It's making people ask questions, and it's making people realize that you do sometimes have to take it on a case-by-case basis. You know, understanding that certain bi celebrities, some people are going to be bi, some people are going to be fluid, some people are going to want to be as pan. I mean, they're going to come from all walks of life, just like bisexuals, right? There's no one kind of bisexual. There's a lot of kinds of bisexuals.
Yay, so, and I say yay.
And it's not even to say, oh, they say, oh, one of, if a person is saying, but I don't use that idea. I go, okay, that's fine.
Okay.
We just consider you part of our community, because our community has a lot of different people in it. And that's something that takes a while for folks to understand that,
yeah.
You know, we've seen pansexual use in certain regions. We know that fluid has been used extensively on the West Coast, where terms like polysexual or multisexual or omnisexual get used more on the East Coast.
Right.
So it's one of those things where we as a community have been seeing this happen for almost, I think, 40 years, the proliferation of terms. And the queer community has been struggling with this proliferation of terms because they're just like, there just needs to be one thing, just one thing. But it's not like that for anybody, right? It's not like that for feminist communities. Certainly not like that for the Black community. You know, they're, the names that the Black community has used just in the last 50 years have changed several times.
Oh, yeah.
And they're based off of our understanding of our community. They're based off the fact that, hey, there's, of African descent works for people a lot more, especially if they're biracial or if they've got a whole bunch of mixture in their life or their approach to race is reflected within how they identify. So getting folks to understand, you know, that is, I think it's a challenge because a lot of times people come out as bi a little later in life than we know that gay or lesbian people come out. And, you know, our identity, the way that we process our identity and how we do what we call identity maintenance of continuing to think about our being bi and how that relates to our life is something that many gay or straight people don't do. So, you know, there's a process where people can really think to themselves, because I don't see this reflected in the larger world. This is just me. I'm just like this. So therefore, I have been raped. I was raped. This happened to me. It's not a community issue. I have the problem of drinking. I have this problem.
Right.
And then we see that happen with gay or straight folks who say, well, my friend who's bi, she's a little crazy. Right? And this word crazy. You know, it's not that she's crazy. She's going through a mental health crisis.
Exactly.
You know? And
exactly.
She's not going to always be crazy if you could help her out today.
Yeah, if you could help her.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing where this is a bi issue. This is not just an issue you own by yourself. And that's something I still struggle with, trying to explain to folks or to get people to quote-unquote buy into that, to understand that I'm not dismissing their pain, that I'm not calling it something that's not important to them or to me. Like, that's hard, because sometimes people think, like, oh, you're being firm about this, and you don't know what it's like. You don't know. And I'm like, no, I do know. I mean, I know some of it, and I'd like to learn more. But it can be challenging. It can be very challenging, especially for folks who have been in the movement for a while, because you kind of get inoculated against some of the things that other bi people live with on a day-to-day basis, not living within a bi community. So, you know, we have to work to spread it, right? We have to work to inoculate, protect our community from biphobia that they experience inside themselves, right?
Yes.
The feeling of feeling
sticky
or gross, or we have to kind of confront that and say, how much of that is because you're not really loving this identity and you think it has problems, and you think it's a class-based identity, you think it's a white identity, you have all these kind of maybe things that aren't necessarily true, that we know aren't true, because we have the data that says we have a lot of people of color in our community. We have the data that suggests that our community is quite large and that there's a lot of different ways we approach our identity. So, you know, it's a challenge. It's still a challenge, but I find that the fastest way through for me has just been a lot of personal conversations, just trying to get to the table with people and to set up a conversation and see what we can come to. You know, what is there that we're doing?
I absolutely agree with that, because I know that my own biphobia was my biggest problem. And I relate it back to my need to be as normal as possible because of my sexual history as a child.
Mm-hmm.
That I just could not assimilate what I thought the word bisexual meant. So I just buried that very, very deeply. So I think that if people can get to the point of understanding that they're okay, they're all right, and they're part of a bigger thing, and maybe some of the things that are happening with them and to them in their life, you know, the bigger community can help with, because they're going through the same thing. I think that's very important. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think that, you know, being able to advocate for people's stories and say, you know, hey, like, you know, let's receive the testimony, right? That's I grew up in a Christian fundamentalist house as well, so, you know, I like to take certain things and turn them on their head. Like, one of the terms I was thinking about was reaping the whirlwind. And this is kind of a Christian fundamentalist philosophy that gets pushed a lot, as far as, oh, you know, God is going to bless you with all these things. And, you know, those that didn't have it, you know, the whirlwind comes from them, and who knows what happens. So I'm always like, let's just get rid of all the hell and stuff, bit, and we'll just focus on the cool stuff, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, get rid of that. But, you know, the cool bit is this idea that, you know, you could reap what you sow, like in a really wonderful, positive way, that you could put down roots and see them grow, right? That you could raise a child and have a wonderful experience, that you could be a child and have a wonderful experience. This has not always been the truth for us, and we have to recognize as a generation that, you know, the work we do for ourselves right now is also work that we're doing for the future. And it only can really heal those pasts as much as we heal our own past, right? And like Kyle, I'm thinking about my science fiction, going back to that little girl and saying, it's going to be okay, you're going to be fine. You wait till you see how wonderful it gets. That's something that it can be hard to get folks to understand that it's going to get wonderful, that their life has that potential for expansive richness and, you know, just that powerful possibility is out there as a bi person, especially out there as a bi person. That's something that's hard to get wrap your head around sometimes.
I do see that, what's going on, and I feel like it's going to continue for the year. This very upward momentum is very encouraging to the community to bring it together, and I'm really excited about it. John had a few questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
He is very low, and I apologize for John for not being able to be here today, but he is very heavily involved in his local Washington D.C. Bay area. And he had some questions, and one of them was, when he came out, he found BNDC. A big part was dinner every Tuesday night in DuPont. In those days, we connected locally to a national or regional work because of our relationship to Binet USA. As I'm sure you're aware, many of the groups fell apart in the early days of the century. Without connections, we pitched in as individuals to activist alerts from Binet. What is Binet doing today to help local bisexual communities rebuild to help cities with local groups build regional connections?
Well, one thing I wanted to just touch on that, you know, John's question I think really talks a lot about is, you know, the history of Binet USA. And granted, quite a bit of this history, you know, happened when I was 10, 11. I'm 34, so I'm one of those folks who kind of straddles that gap, or the difference between older generations or some of the younger folks. But what I understand about Binet was that, you know, there was this need to have these groups across the country, that every community was crying out in need. And this is before the internet, right?
Yes.
And so it's so interesting because Binet USA and other groups were starting to exist to build a network, right?
Mm-hmm.
And before the internet, there was this idea that, you know what, maybe these groups of people should be connected. And maybe mm-hmm. we should share information and get things across and pass the word along and be a light in each other's lives. You know, kind of like Paul Revere riding through the United States or something going, bye, stay alive. You know, and this was during the time of the HIV/AIDS crisis when people weren't talking about sexuality at all. You know, people are just saying it's okay for those guys to die out. And, you know, heroes came to the forefront, and they acted up, and they got involved. And the bi community was part of the gay community to a very, a much larger degree than I think that we are now. And part of the reason why we have Binet or other organizations out there, I think, was to develop those communities. You know, and as years went by, we've had ebbs and flows of our organization. And that's something I think is very important for folks to see, because a lot of times people see it as, my organization fell apart, instead of seeing it as my organization was at an ebb, and I can bring it back, you know?
Right.
And I can revitalize my organization, just like many organizations have to have a revitalization. They have to have someone come in and shake things up, or come in with structure, come in with new ideas on how to make things better. And so one of the things that I really think about when I work with Binet USA is looking at the local communities as being pretty much the important partner, right? Like, they are the organization that's touching the local community. They're the folks who are getting these stories of people trying to survive and trying to live. And I hope that what we can do is build Binet USA out as a resource where we can be taking these, you know, conversations in helping folks, you know, grow their community, and not necessarily see it as, like, you need to grow Binet USA, right? That's something that, you know, I think a lot of people get confused about, or I talk about brands, and they're like, well, why are you deciding the brand? And I'm like, I'm actually not. I just thought it would be, like, really cool if we, like, put together a whole bunch of people and figure out what we didn't hate. Right?
Yes, it would.
I'm really only interested in what can you get behind, right? So if you can get behind this, and this is something you feel comfortable with, and we can get like 50 or 60 people across the United States to kind of say, overall we like this. This is the best approach we can think of right now. We reserve the right to change our minds. What we need to do as bi people is always keep our options open when it comes to our approach to life and our approach to education and our community. We're never going to be static. We're always going to keep changing. So that's really what, you know, I see myself as, hopefully, as a driver to get folks together, say, hey, you're not so different, and trying to get us to have a community that talks, that stays on, quote-unquote, message, that shares a similar philosophy is a blessing. It does not mean that you have to stay to the same course as everyone. It doesn't mean that you're not allowed to talk out of turn. It doesn't mean that you're not allowed to have your own opinions and create new worlds. None of that. All we're trying to say is, like, hey, there's certain things that we've got to kind of make some decisions on so we can get further faster, right? And we know that we get further faster with each other. And that's just been the history of my life, of being a person who's crossed boundaries, being a person who has seen opportunities and said, oh, well, I think I can put together, we can do a little group here, you know? And so it's a struggle, though, because there are folks who see, you know, they're like, well, Binet USA should be, you know, funding our organization. And I'm like, well, we don't, you know, our budget's online. We don't have a large budget. You know, when I first came into Binet USA, we worked quite a bit on grant applications. And we got turned down so harsh for things I thought were easy to get that I realized it very quickly. Many bi folks will have immense difficulty getting a grant because when you say bisexual, they roll their eyes and walk away.
Yes.
That's how it was when we were getting grants 5 years ago. That's not how it is today. Right? And why is that? Well, we had important moments happen and we rallied for those moments. Linda Susan Ulrich published the Bisexual Invisibility Report, stunned the world with all the data that we could use, you know, gathering, compiling. She had to sift through so much shit. Like, mm-hmm. I can't even imagine the heart and the resiliency that she was able to just maintain, you know, and now she, you know, her and her wife have a lovely son. They're just pushing it. They've got great things coming down the pipeline in their life. But thank Linda Susan for doing this amazing work to get this data, to bring it out so we can see it, right? So we can know
yes.
this data is there to support our agenda, which is to save our lives, right? That's part
exactly.
of the reason why we have to work so, so hard on understanding what are all of our organizations capable of doing? What's the capacity for them? How can we increase their capacity? You know, one of the things I'm starting to think about is, hey, I'm in a parachute, right? And I'm pulling the cord, right? When I pull the cord, I float a little higher above maybe the rest of the folks floating down, but not in a sense that I'm better or worse, right? Not that I am
right.
anyplace else, but just in a different piece of just in a different space. Right, just in a different place in the air, you know,
yes,
moving
exactly.
and navigating, and not because I'm better, not because you're worse, not because I'm worse, not because you're better. We have to move from as much of that thinking as we can, and it can be hard because you know I'm a media person, right? I live and breathe celebrities. I've been on a reality show. I work for a celebrity. I've done things in media. I intend to continue doing things in media. That's my personal interest and my personal background. And I
mm-hmm.
hope that I can be a benefit to the bi community as I pursue my own goals, right?
Yes.
And I'm hoping that that's the case for everybody, right? That no one approaches this work saying, you know, I'm not going to get anything out of this. I'm just going to work until they've sucked every drop out of me and die. Oh, don't do that. You're too
yeah.
important for that. Your spirit, your every part of us and every one of us is too important for that. And so I do encourage people to engage their ego and talk about what they're going to get, you know, or talk about where they're going to benefit. And that way we can share in each other's wins when they happen and not be dismissive or competitive or not see that as a benefit to our own lives. You know, there used to be a kind of an issue of people accepting folks who are quote unquote professional bisexuals. Like if you got paid to do this, then, you know, you might lose some respect with the idea, right?
Oh.
And I really pushed back on that. And, you know, I'm just starting to make very small, minuscule amounts of money on speaking engagements. And I'm proud of that. I am proud that, I can take care of myself and my family. That's important
Ooh.
To me. I can't do this work if I cannot take care of myself, especially growing up in poverty
yeah.
and having food insecurity. Like, I'm just really all about making sure that doesn't happen again. and there's certain people who don't feel the same way, who are like, no, I'm okay, you know, not making a lot of money and being devoted to this cause. And, you know, so it just depends on who you are. And if we have just the modicum of respect and civility to understand where people's approaches are coming from, you can get, I think you have a better idea of what's happening. You know, because I've definitely heard occasionally somebody say, well, Faith doesn't have that issue. She's rich. Or even I saw someone online, somebody thought I was white, and I was like, what?
What?
Just got followed in the grocery store just today. And I'm like turning around.
Wow.
I'm just in, you know, I'm in my own headset, you know, and not even thinking about things, and I turn around, this guy's just staring at me, and he's a security guard, and I'm like, can I help you? And he said something like, what are you doing here? I told you not to come back here. And I was like, you told me not to come back to the store? Really? When did we talk about that? And then he was like, oh, you're not the right person. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to get back to choosing Cheerios or not.
Yeah, I'll get back to my life over here. Oh, I'm so sorry.
But that's, you know, I mean, it's unfortunate, but that's the reality for folks, you know, of color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talk the way I do because I grew up in a biracial home. I had a white stepfather, and so, you know, I had to deal with race issues pretty fucking early, excuse my language.
Yeah,
but,
no,
you know,
that's
really
fine.
Really early and to try to find my own way, and I'm still learning. I'm still, you know, learning and changing and asking people to be critical with me and to ask critical questions and mm-hmm. to say to me, okay, could you have said this differently in a way that would have gotten your point across? I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I could. So
well,
it's
you
a
know.
Challenge. It's a challenge
it's
for
a
everybody.
You take them as they come and you deal with them as they are. You know,
right.
My daughter, my granddaughter is mixed and her boyfriend is also mixed. And this is something, you know, I'm pretty white. And then, you know, he says, you know, he just expects us to take a lot longer at the airport because they always have to go through the checks, you know,
yes.
through the pass
yes.
down.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because they're black.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's something
a young
that's
man.
Hard sometimes for folks to understand of like just
yeah.
kind of the day-to-day, you know, like if I leave
yeah.
my house and I just hurry up and like just run out to go grab some milk and I don't, you know, put some mascara on or I just put like a cap on, I can experience racial profiling, right? And somebody will say, well, is it good for you that you're, you know, you're caring about your appearance so that you don't get racially profiled? Shouldn't you confront that? Like, yeah, some days, but some days I just need the milk real quick. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
But,
exactly.
Some days I just need to get out and, you know, I have to take care with my approach and I have to teach that approach to my son who's biracial so that he can understand that if he's someplace and he's perceived in a way, he needs to take care, you know, that we have to mm-hmm. teach our sons about hoodies, you know, that
yeah.
he can wear a hoodie, that you better take that hoodie
yeah.
down if you start mm-hmm. to have an issue with somebody,
mm-hmm.
you need to understand that you got to stay safe and that people... You know, unfortunately, for better or worse right now, they're shooting black people. Like, so,
yes.
you know, be aware that, you know,
be
you
aware.
Need to be careful in your community. That,
you know,
you
and
know,
we, yeah.
should be, that you should protect yourself. And I see this a lot with, you know, trans women where, you know, like, just, God, anytime if I ever see, like, any trans person being, like, yelled at, I'm, like, there in a hurry. Like,
yes.
they're like, who the hell are you? And I'm like, I'm face. What's going on? Like,
so.
You know, because
yeah.
I just never just mind boggles me that if you were to see somebody and identify them, oh, it looks like they might be trans, that you wouldn't see bravery and courage spilling out of their
oh.
pores.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
That
I mean,
wouldn't be what your first initial thought is.
I don't understand why people don't see that. To me, that is the first thing I see is like, is the bravery. And you know, and we're talking about the profiling thing. Is, you know, white people have no idea what it means to get stopped by a cop, if people have.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a fear of your life. And it's across the board because it's unfortunately, that's the way it is. And I think people have to understand how damaging profiling really can be.
Yeah.
You
know? Oh, sure. And understanding that it's hard to discuss it. You know, it's hard to talk about it. I know for myself, like, my son is really cute. He's really quite attractive.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I think empirically or whatever, you know. I was surprised when he came out. I was like, really? But, you know, he gets a lot of attention in the grocery stores. So, you know, I experience a sense of privilege
yeah.
with him, not necessarily just because he is biracial, but just because he's so darn cute that, you know, if I'm in the grocery store with him, you know, people aren't following me around because I'm black. You know, they're following him around because they'd like for him to say hello and give him a smile. Give us a little
yeah.
chuckle, kiddo. You know, and
yeah.
when I go into the grocery store, you know, and I get to the checkout, they go, well, where's your son? We wanted to see
oh.
him. We haven't seen him in a while. Is he getting bigger? What's his hair like? What's he looking like? You know,
mm-hmm.
so it's just so interesting because, you know, I hope and I pray for him that, you know, his experience as a person of color will be more gentle. And it will be
yes.
based off the fact that more people are crossing boundaries into communities and realizing that, no, it's not that we're really that different, but the differences are some of the most amazing things about us. And that, you know, if you get into a culture or community and you're a little off-put by the fact that, wow, it smells a lot like frying oil or these people are talking about things that I have no idea what they're talking about, that you don't freak out or you don't think that that's weird and you don't want to be around that. You want to find out more. And not
mm-hmm.
in a way that's, you know, intrusive or confronting or not accepting. You don't want to tokenize people. You don't want to make people feel uncomfortable. So
mm-hmm.
it's just about approaching things with care. And that's something I think is by people. We have a lot of experience asking for.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of opportunity for people to roll up to an intersection in their life or in a friend's life and stand firm with them. You know, we mm-hmm. know that we've been doing that. Bi people have been supporting trans folks for years. You know, I've got a t-shirt I'm going to start wearing. Somebody sent a bunch of them so I can put a couple in the archives. But one of them I'm going to wear because it says 1997 Bi Trans Day. And I'm like, you should know that happened in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And they made t-shirts.
Yeah.
That was a visible action. That was a visible, you know, opportunity for us. And we have to be careful about it, you know, especially when it comes to trans folks. You know, I've met some trans folks who are like, oh, you know, people say they're bi. I kind of get a little worried because they start to hit on me, and I'm not sure, like, if they just like me because I'm trans, if that's a fetish thing. And I'm like, oh, I can understand that. I'm sorry that that happened to you. But, you know, I do think that a lot of bi people probably, if you identify yourself as trans or they perceive something about you as trans, it's not that they were just perceiving your transness. It might have been also that they were perceiving your bi-ness. It might have been that they were perceiving your courage and something that
yes.
you share with them, which is an innate bravery
and
ability.
And the resilience. And I think
I
think that, at me, I particularly find trans people quite attractive, and those are the reasons I do. It's because they show that bravery and resilience, and that's what I find attractive. And
sure, and you have to backtrack that to understand that again, part of the reason what you're attracted to is not that you're attracted to this guy or this girl, because you as a bi person are attracted to certain characteristics of people.
Exactly.
And so you in particular like this. Other people like other things. You know, they like mm-hmm. somebody's doing this or doing that. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's a good challenge. Yeah.
Okay, John says, he's from Maryland. The legislative work is pretty much done. We're just one possible referendum away from the completion of EQMD's agenda. Already people are beginning to discuss all of the LGBT work that's still needed, but it hasn't been done by the top bullet points. It seems a real opportunity for us. Can you talk about any long-range planning to take care of this goal, of this field?
Well, I think that all the quality organizations across for each state, they represent mm-hmm. a great opportunity for local organizers. So I do think it's important to engage with organizers like Equality Maryland and say, mm-hmm. hey, listen, you know, you've been working on this, and we know that, you know, there's more than marriage. So here's some of the things that we've got coming down that we need your assistance on. And, you know, making sure you reference other equality organizations that are bi-inclusive. We've got a really great example with Equality Michigan, whose executive director, Emily Diefendorf, mm-hmm. is a really proud bi woman. She went with us to the White House. So we've got people in place in certain places that do help us and assist with that. But it's important that if you're in a state, you know, you've got a bit more kind of pull than a person who doesn't live in that state.
Right.
So if you recognize lack of bi inclusion in that state's agenda or that state equality's agenda, definitely, you know, jump on that as an opportunity. You can loop in Bi-Net USA, you can loop in other organizations. I definitely, you know, want to see more and more folks coming to a larger leadership space, and we'll have news about that hopefully in the next month or two, about opportunities for us to do, you know, community leadership calls and say, okay, it's not just a Bi-Net thing, it's not just this organization, it's a whole bunch of orgs. Just simply trying to attempt to be on the same page and to try to see where we can help and match resources. You know, sometimes people have extra computers or they've got extra bandwidth for marketing or, you know, like I'm a social media person. If you need social media help, I can help. And so what can we do to help? And understand that, you know, we have our own long-term goals, but a lot of times our own long-term goals can get a lot of assistance from people who are on the ground right there who, you know, have that connection. So having the conversation with as many people as possible, it really helps. It can be challenging,
right.
And I know a lot of people have a distinct discomfort with trying to have an email conversation with 60 people, right?
That's
wildly get out of control. But the blessing that comes from that conversation will just be a light in your life, you know?
Exactly.
Hear from this hero or that hero, their frustration, yeah. their concern, their consideration. That's it. That's a blessing.
And their viewpoint, seeing something from everyone's angle, well, for myself, is an amazing thing. It really was.
It's really as great as possible. And if there are people occasionally, you know, there's people in our community who are pinpointed as our leaders who aren't. You know, there are people who, there's organizations that, you know, are like, hey, you're the movement. No, you're not the movement.
No.
Nobody is. USA is not the bisexual movement, you know?
We all are the movement, really.
Yeah, we all are the movement. So I definitely think there's a great opportunity with each of the equality groups that are out there, though.
But John says, it's money. So much bisexual work is volunteer, and so much of the money comes out of our own pockets. We have studies, stats, and reports useful to make the case for funding, like you already mentioned, but it is a lot of work to collect and put into a proposal. And what is Binet USA doing to improve the opportunities for our communities to receive funding? And we did touch on this, but if we could just go over it again.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think the White House trip is a really great opportunity for people to share that with their local communities. Like, if you have an OD center in your community and it's not serving bi people, you know, you can say, hey, you know, bi folks went to the White House. Here's the things they discussed. I want to start seeing these things discussed. You know, making sure that you understand how funding works, right?
Yes.
Like, if you want people to pay attention to you and you say, oh, well, we need to do a media, let's do this, media tour or something. Let me call GLAD and see if they've got funding for us. Well, GLAD doesn't do direct funding, right? GLAD receives their funding from somebody else. You can reach out to Binet USA or another group that works with GLAD, like Bisexual Resource Center, and say, hey, I've got this opportunity. Maybe GLAD could share it on their website. That would be, that's awesome, right? They have millions of hits, millions of followers. I mean, lots of people follow them and know about them. So sharing it with them and having them share it is great for you. But if you're looking for funding in particular, I definitely encourage everybody to be looking more at public funds versus private funds.
Yep.
So, and I do not pretend or espouse myself or whatever you would say. I will not call myself an expert in grants and funding and that kind of stuff. But what I have seen is a similar trajectory for us to what the transgender community has done is that they have been looking at public funds surrounding health, surrounding safety, and security, right? And those are the type of funds that we should also be accessing. So most states have a public health initiative or they have a health department. They have people there who work on quote-unquote LGBT health. And most of those folks would actually probably be very happy to hear from you. If your organization, let's say in Maryland or Virginia or something like that, is going to those organizations and saying, here's what we need. This is what we've got on the ground from our folks. They need this. And, you know, some people could see it as, quote-unquote, leapfrogging or circumventing the gay group that might be saying they work on LGBT behalf or the behalf of the LGBT community. But what I have found is that many of those organizations know they don't serve bi people, and they're a lot of them are actually concerned about that. And so they will assist you, and they'll see it as an opportunity to strengthen their grant profile as well. So really approaching public institutions, understanding that you have a right to call your state health initiative and say, this needs to happen for bi people, or you need awareness training from Binet USA, or you need this or that. There's lots of opportunities to do that. So I think what Binet USA is doing is helping change the conversation, but it's up to our local leaders to really make hay out of that, you know, like to do as much as they can there. Because I don't think the funding structure is going to be that Binet USA gets, you know, half a billion dollar and distributes that to local communities. I think it's much more likely that Binet USA can assist each local community getting the funding it deserves, right? The money that's allocated for your state, your county, your city. And LGBT, you know, leadership has made a great success of accessing those resources for certain initiatives. But that's not been done for bi people at all. It must be done on a separate, specific basis.
Well, that is all. That's very important. I mean, that is very important to have. And I, you know, the bisexual awareness training, incredibly important. And you know, to have that in our corner is fantastic. You know, so woohoo, yay. I would be clapping, but that makes a lot of noise. Okay, so let's just go ahead and wrap this up. It's been a great talk with you. We're looking forward to future by events and projects such as the Lambda Literary Awards in June and the American Institute of Bisexuality Research Update. Anything else we should be paying attention to in the coming year?
I think there's just going to be a really enormous opportunity for the bi community to plug in. So if you're a bi leader, if you are an organizer working in, you know, an LGBT community, and you're not doing bi work, that's okay. But you're a bi person. You still need support. You still need community assistance or just, you know, it goes beyond emotional support. It's more of like personal and professional development of your bi-ness and how to navigate some of the world. Like, some of the older folks have some great stories that are very helpful. So, just like some of the younger folks have some great stories that are very helpful.
Yes, very helpful.
So we have a lot of, and the middle folks too. You know, there's, don't forget anybody. You know, there's definitely this opportunity for us to, kind of start farming our people power, not in like a gross matrix way, but like, you know, in a really positive way where, you know, we have a power in our community. And part of that power is when we get together and we make change together and we demand change together and represent, you know, our country, represent our world. You know, there's an international movement for bi people. There's opportunities for us. So I definitely think in the coming year what's going to be is just like, the tide is coming. You know, jump in the boat, grab your life jacket, because we are each other's life jackets. We are the boat.
Yes.
Right? We're the boat.
Yep. Leave no bi behind.
Leave no bi behind. You know, grab it. The rising tide is coming. You know, we're starting to move these boats. And, you know, it's in part because of the conversations that we've had, because people have driven us. And it's all parts. You know, it's the people who, you know, clang the drum and yell angrily. It's the people who are super sweet about it. It's the people who are, you know, flat inflection. It doesn't matter. You know, every one of us has helped get to this point. And, you know, recognizing folks that were banging the drum in the past, like Kyle Schnickner with Rose by Any Other Name, or just people who've been doing this for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And just making sure that we're taking care of our elders. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see us acknowledge our elders and acknowledge that they may need assistance, just like they need assistance in our elder years.
I think about that daily, and I want to cry every time that we should have that
for them. I know, and that is one of my goals.
Yeah, and it might not be. I mean, we can work with Sage and help develop that stage, that space for LGBT leaders, but we also have to work with elder groups that are already existing.
Yes.
You know, I want to get Robin Oakes into AARP. She's a card-carrying member. You know, I'd love to see her there. I'm like, I don't know what you could do, Robin, but wouldn't that be great if you just gave them permission?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah. So, I mean, I think that's seeing where we got the opportunities and where we're struggling to still make change. We have to just take the different routes, you know.
Yeah, what I love about the community is that we are using the media so effectively. We have our Warrior Watching Tumblr and our Warrior Watching Twitter, and we have people blogging and putting out articles and putting out, you know, media on YouTube, and we're using everything to get to everyone, and I really think that's important, and it's great. And it's all done out of the love of everybody's heart.
Yeah.
I don't really know anybody's making any money.
No, I mean, if you could take care of yourself, that's what would be wonderful, you know. That's why I tell people when they ask me to speak now, I say, you know, my husband has a job, I'm a mom, you know, and the deal is that if you could help me get there so that we don't have to take money out of our non-existent savings, that I can come, you know, and sometimes I can't come, and people are like, well, you know, you went here, and I'm like, yeah, because I was able to get help there, I want to go everywhere, I'd love to be everywhere, but I also want to be very careful and be respectful of my relationship, respectful of my responsibilities as a mom and as a stepmom. And sometimes that means I turn down things to, you know, like I did last week. I turned down HuffPost Live, and I love appearing on that. But it was time for me to get to kindergarten and pick up my stepdaughter from school. so that, you know, I could be there and be an active part in our modern family, where I'm very, you know, glad to have developed a great relationship with her mom. And working it out, you know, we're working in our modern family, we're making life good for our kids. So you got to do what you got to do.
Well, that's what it's all really all about, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we appreciate your time on here today. I mean, I know it's a big chunk of your day. You're pretty busy. And we appreciate you doing it for free, of course.
Oh, of course. No problem.
So I just wanted to say goodbye and thank you so much. And remember, we're not broken. We're not wrong. We're human beings. And we're bisexual.
Woohoo! Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay, Faith. Bye.
Bye.
But you don't understand all those girls and the curves in this world. You go down, but you come back around. You like boys, but you don't understand all their toys. Well, they get so out of hand. You go down, but you come back around. Uh-oh. Which way do you go?